It's Tuesday, October 24th.
It's the end of an era, an epoch. This is the 52nd episode of the 11-1 News, which brings us to the close for season one.
Season one closing. Oh my gosh. So the joke is us, right? It's been a fun year.
The joke is also that the season lasted a whole year.
Well, we've got something special in mind for the beginning of season two, but you're just going to have to stay tuned and hope that we figure out exactly how special that's going to be. On with the news. Bitcoin has breached 6,000 for the first time. It was close to 6,200 earlier, but now I think it's down around 5,900 as of the time of this video. So, you know, Bitcoin's kind of been all over the place. I mean, it's dipped down as low as like 4,800 in like the last week or two.
Yeah. It's volatile. Everybody knows it's volatile, but if you're brave, that's what you want, right? The good thing is, though, it seems like it always takes a beating in response to something. Like there's a big news event, you know, China and Korea banning ICOs and Jamie Dimon trying to talk it down, but it keeps going right back up.
Something Kardashians, and then it goes right back up.
You think they'll have an ICO?
The Kardashian coin? I don't think that's a good idea.
Do you think their fan base is tech savvy?
No.
Beyond smartphone texting and Facebooking?
No. There's no chance.
Wouldn't you love to just sit Kim Kardashian down at this desk and be like, all right, you've got 10 minutes. Explain cryptography and the blockchain.
I think we could start even simpler. It's like, explain how a mouse works. Or like, what happens when you press a key on the keyboard? Like, how does that, it would be a lot of fun. Also, follow-ups. We got not an unusual number of follow-ups this week, but the follow-ups this week are extra funny. The first is Tesla. We've actually got a few stories about Tesla because, oh my gosh, we covered last week that they're fired or whatever.
Yeah, but they're all about the same thing.
Well, I mean, kinda, yeah. I mean, they all have the same theme of ex-employees, but some of them get really dicey. So,
yeah.
I don't know. So Tesla employees detail how they were fired and claim that the dismissals were not performance related. At least these journalists at CNBC, I guess, have found at least two employees that had a rating of 4 out of 5 at the, you know, employee review, whatever process that Tesla has, but they were dismissed anyway.
They claim, again, this is CNBC. I don't know what kind of evidence they have, that most of the people who were fired were actually some of the top paid people in their section. And this was all from Tesla Motors. Nothing else to do with Musk's empire. And so if you had a group of people working on X, the person who was paid the most seems to be the most likely to have been fired.
Now, this might have also been in response to the Model 3, because there was also a report in this that said that performance reviews will be suspended until Model 3 production is back on track. Well, Model 3 production is very far from being on track. So maybe that's also related in here. I don't know.
They also mentioned that it seems like a lot of these people have been replaced already, but not with full-time employees. So Tesla has full-time employees who work for Tesla, but then they also have these, you know, outsourced staffing agency employees. And it seems like a lot of people have already been replaced. Maybe that's temporary. But the next story is about two of those said staffing employee people.
Apparently, things got kind of racist and dicey inside of Tesla. One of them took a picture with their camera phone. I've got to find a picture of it here. I don't know if you guys can see that in the video. You should check out the article. But it's like, it's hard to imagine a scenario. Like, you know, context is king, right? It's hard to imagine a scenario where, you know, this is good-natured ribbing.
Well, you also have to remember that, you know, we think of Tesla, we think about like high tech, right? Like this Silicon Valley, you know, these kinds of people. These are auto workers. You know, I mean, this is a different kind of mentality. I would say if you went to, you know, Detroit, where do they make cars now?
Detroit.
Is it still wherever? You know, I imagine there's a lot of probably good natured racial-based humor, going, if there's such a thing, and the modern age going on. And maybe some people are more, you know, touchy about that or whatever. One thing about this story is they never went through the process of, like, alerting the staffing agency and be like, hey, there's racism. all these claims apparently came after the fact.
So, so are you saying that the situation might be something related to just like maybe the manager was in on it? Maybe the manager was in on it and a terrible person, or maybe the manager was in on it and a member of the same minority or the same targeted racial whatever?
I'm saying it's probably likely that this kind of shit goes on constantly, for good or for ill. And these guys got fired, and they see where, you know, where the wind is blowing in the country at the moment, and they said, "Hey, we can do something about this." And they did.
I think some of the people in our audience might have experience with like blue collar factory work type conditions. Now, I've dealt with blue collar factory work type conditions and found some really, really professional people, but I've also dealt with blue collar factory work where, you know, the guys were barely literate. So I could see it going either way.
Well, I'm not talking as much about like hard-boiled racism as like, you know, guys who think that's funny. And maybe you could, you know, I'm sure a lot of people would make the argument that's even worse. But, you know, it's just, hey, we got fired. How can we turn the situation around?
Well, at least we haven't had to resort to fart jokes. I mean, can you imagine a factory floor where everybody's all about fart jokes? I mean, that just seems like that would get old. So racism is the next logical step, I guess.
I imagine they have great ventilation on the Tesla floor.
They're hit with another lawsuit simultaneously, this time alleging anti-LGBT harassment. So I don't know. This seems awfully opportunistic, like you say. I mean, there's a lot of this stuff coming out of the woodwork, and it's like former Tesla employees, but, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, you can't know. And I'm no fan of Tesla, but it seems weird that a lot of people get fired and all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait, this was because I am X protected class or whatever.
In our continuing series on the death of a medium, Verizon has reported 18,000 pay TV subscriptions and have been lost. And they're going to delay their live streaming TV service. They say for technical reasons, but we think it's probably because they're hemorrhaging subscribers.
It's funny, in this article, they talk about, like, clearly they have no idea what to do with millennials, right? That's one of the big things in the industry is like, millennials, what do we do with the millennials? It's the millennials' fault. One of the things they're looking to acquire, maybe they already acquired, is like Awesomeness TV. And you can tell that was a focus group. Like, what do the millennials want? Well, they want awesomeness, right? Let's just call it that. Last year, during the same quarter, they gained 53,000. So minus 18 versus plus 53. It's real bad.
Now, you know what would be really, really bad is if all of those people were going to Netflix and other services like that by the millions. That hasn't happened yet, but Netflix did add 5.3 million subscribers. If those subscribers are testing the water and are dual subscribers for other things like Verizon, it's easy to imagine that in subsequent quarters, those 5.3 million are going to catch up to the subscription cable TV subscription numbers as they shed those services.
Yeah, I don't think, I think once you get Netflix, unless there's something really specific you want on that cable package, it makes a lot of sense to drop it, because who needs it, you know?
So of course the logical step is to raise broadband prices. What? I mean, in a move that surprises no one, cable companies are like, there's tons of competition. Raise the prices.
Now, the funny thing about this is, and I experienced this, because we just had Spectrum take over, or wait, is it Spectrum now?
Yeah.
It was Charter, and now it's Spectrum, whatever. Anyway, they took over and they called me up and they were like, hey, you're on this really expensive internet plan, the most expensive one we've got. Why don't we just give you this plan that adds TV and halves the price? And it's like, what? I keep my same bandwidth? Yeah. So that's totally, they want those numbers. They want to call me a TV subscriber. I've never hooked up the cable box. It's still sitting there in a box. I've never taken the wrapping paper off of it.
Well, if you read this article, it would have you believe that the insidious plan there is that you're going to get hooked on cable, much like cocaine, a digital cocaine, if you will, and you're not going to be able to turn that cable package off when they hike the prices. Little do they know that the broadband is more like cocaine than the cable TV service at this point.
I mean, the cable TV service, with all that, with all those commercials, it's kind of like cocaine with little bits of broken glass ground up in it. I don't think I'll ever be addicted to that.
I would say that it's mostly broken glass with bit of cocaine.
So 40% broken glass, 20% baby laxative, and the rest is cocaine.
Now, Google Chrome, this is kind of a follow-up, but kind of some new information. Google Chrome, it looks like they are moving forward with a permission to stop in-browser cryptocurrency mining. And this is, you know, let's not forget, Google, first and foremost, is an advertising company. They're all about advertising. Those advertising dollars, those banner ads on websites, is what built the Google empire. So it's easy to imagine a world where you don't give up your privacy. You don't give up, you know, anything. You just have your browser mine crypto for the website that you're spending a lot of time on. And you can do that completely anonymously. And so, but the interesting thing with that is that Google can't be the middleman for selling ads in that scenario, which is perhaps problematic.
Now, of course, there is no way to, you know, as a browser, be like, hey, I'm mining coins right now. And they don't report that. There's no like, here, let's set the mining coins flag equal to true. That doesn't happen. So they're having to try to come up with a way. And what they're thinking about doing is if you peg the CPU to X percent for Y seconds, we assume that you are mining Bitcoin.
And not the terrible ad analytics, because that happens with the terrible ad analytics. Yeah,
not Bitcoin. Don't give me a correction. It's Monero. But you get the crypto. Yeah. And so we actually were talking about this earlier. It's always a struggle for us because we try not to use an ad blocker because, of course, we benefit from ads. You know, it's a dark secret, right? We don't benefit very much from them, but we need every cent.
If it makes you feel any better, we feel really terrible about from ads.
But, you know, hey, you're on YouTube. You want to get the meager alms that YouTube will still give you after the apocalypse. So we don't want to be hypocrites. But it takes an extra, what do you say, 10 minutes?
Yeah, at least.
To load all the tabs and wait for those tracking scripts to stop crippling the browser so you can click the next link. It's infuriating. So I wonder, once that, we'll have to test that. I mean, we won't have a choice. But when that, because we use Chrome, when that's added, will it assume that we're getting crypto mined when we try to load all these tabs and the tracking scripts take over?
That's going
to
have explicit exceptions for like using the Google Tag Manager and things like that. So you just need to put your crypto script in the Google Tag Manager and then you'll be all right. That one's whitelisted.
But it is definitely hypocrisy for Google to say, hey, you're using up too much of the CPU or too much of the RAM. No, that's not allowed. When, you know, they definitely allow tracking scripts to do exactly that.
Given companies' dubious value, honestly, I think that Google, like, there's an opportunity here. Google is basically at odds with the old school ad industry at this point, because modern advertising, effective modern advertising, needs deep analytics that pretty much only Google has access to. There's a lot of companies that are emulating it, but it ranges from half-assed to terrible. And while Google has the ability to do that, they also will turn off customers from being deep and invasive and things like that. I think Google should double down. I think Google should provide an API that would provide access to something with better performance than JavaScript. Maybe they can provide a GPU plugin or something like that. It's like, hey, we're providing an explicit mechanism for people to do cryptocurrency mining as a way of funding websites, as a way of funding whatever, you know, material and stuff that you want to do. And maybe because it's built in the browser, Google could figure out how to take a cut of that. But I think more interestingly, it would be a better bargaining chip for the ad industry, because the ad industry is really playing hardball with Google now because of dwindling ad money and ad resources. And so I think Google really ought to at least give a lot of lip service to supporting this in order to be in a better position against the ad industry.
I think also, blocking it is not the way to go. What they should do, and again, they're probably not doing this because this is a threat to them. But imagine if, it's like Humble Bundle, for example. People seem to like that whole, like, let me give to charity, but let me decide how much. And they got those little sliders, and I always slide the charity one to zero. You know, like, give it to the game developers. You know, let somebody who's doing something get it. But what if you had the same thing? What if you had a little, you know, a plug-in or even built into Chrome where it pops up and it's like, hey, when you go to the New York Times website, here's a slider. How much CPU do you want to give them? You want to let them mine some coins? And if you register for a site, you know, that's got a forum or something, maybe you have a forum badge. You know, always gives 100%, meaning 100% of your CPU, something like that. It would be pretty easy to bake that in. I'm sure the CoinHive type deals would play ball with that if you standardized it. And it would be a great way to get money to the websites without all the advertising crap.
I mean, can you imagine an indie developers forums? It's like, hey, leave your computer on our forum overnight and, you know, we will make 63 cents, which is about 6,300,000 times more than they would have made from the, you know, banner ad stuff of that. And, you know, click farms and all that stuff would just naturally go away.
And you could, again, it could be built in so that you set percentages and maybe you don't even have to visit the site. Maybe it's just like, hey, when I'm not doing anything for 10 minutes, just start. running this in the background. Just start running their scripts.
I think the an organization like the W3C or a consortium of browser companies. I mean, certainly Mozilla could get in front of this, and then maybe Google would follow suit. But the internet, the article here is the internet is rife with in-browser miners, and it's getting worse every day. I don't know that the characterization, based on the background we've just given you, that the characterization that it's worse really makes sense. I mean, certainly if your machine is sputtering and the browser's having trouble running the JavaScript, yes, that's a terrible experience, but you get that right now with advertising scripts.
And they do mention that CoinHive has got a new version that requires you to explicitly start it. It's got a little play button that's just baked into the site when you add it. And it's like, hey, can we use your CPU? And you click the play button and it starts using it. Now, I think, you say the W3C, no way. They have proven that they're in the pocket of the corporate entities. They will actually probably try to stop this.
It does look that way, doesn't it? And if the media companies are all about this and the whole advertising thing, the advertising industry is going to be very against browser mining. So yeah. If we see the W3C come out with reasoning that requires mental gymnastics for rejecting in-browser crypto mining, then yeah, maybe we'll know what's going
on. Well, I think you see it in this article. It's sort of, it's already being demonized pretty hard.
Oh, yeah.
So is it really that bad? If you can't control it, well, maybe, but you can't control these ads unless you explicitly
can you control your data
create a plugin that gets rid of them. So, and as we said, blacklisting and whitelisting like we do with ads, that won't work with the CoinHive type deals because they could just keep changing it. So I'm sure we're gonna have more follow-ups on this story.
For my web developers and anybody that loves to update WordPress, special warning to you, instead of hacking your WordPress, your WordPress installations are going to be mining Monero. So good luck with that. Now this is the first time I think that we've had a parallel follow-up. We've got a follow-up in an industry that's not related to technology, related to a technology story we covered last week. So I don't know how we want to give the background on this one.
I think it was 2 weeks ago, but it was about the so there's a patent process and you can sidestep it by selling your patent or giving your patent to Native Americans.
This is it's a patent review process. So yeah. Let's say that you patent getting out of bed in the morning, and it's like, wait, should a patent have been granted on this? We need to review. Before it's reviewed in the legal system, you can have patent clerks look at it and say, oh yeah, I don't know what we were smoking that day. Maybe we shouldn't have granted that. But that process before it hits the judicial system doesn't apply to foreign entities that are bringing
sovereign,
the challenge.
Sovereign entities, which are like states. So if the state owns a patent, they could do this. Now you might be thinking, well, so what? It gets through the review and it goes to court, but it's still waking up in the morning. No, that's never. But the problem is it's very expensive to go to court, especially with somebody like Apple or Samsung or whatever. And this protects the patent holder from dealing with that if it's frivolous. If you take this step out of it, then now they have to go to court against these all-star legal teams. And it's not always even possible.
So there's a judge that has thrown out a patent against, what was this, eye moisturizer or something like that?
Yeah, it was like some mixture that made a really amazing eye lube.
The most amazing eye drops you've ever seen, or not seen, as the case may be, because that's why you're using the eye drops, I guess. I don't know. But the judge slammed the strategy of having a Native American company handle that to bypass that sort of internal patent review process to short-circuit the judicial review. I think that the people bringing the frivolous patent stuff, their hope is that, Apple or Google or whatever will just give them $5,000 or $10,000 to go away, a nuisance fee, basically. But
yeah, it's definitely a move to, because they don't expect to win these cases ever. It's like, hey, just settle. We don't even need that much money because we didn't do anything. Give us like $2,000, we'll go away.
Also, in a follow-up, we covered about the whole, Russian troll factory paying for U.S. activists to fund protests during the election. So the more we dig into this, the more interesting it gets. So it's like, were Russian sleeper agents behind, all of the terrible things and the fake news and all this kind of stuff? And, as we peel back the linoleum, in at least some cases, apparently Russia just provided money to crazy people that they thought would be really good at disrupting stuff.
You've probably seen videos of like these activist groups. I think one of these was tangentially related to Black Lives Matter, but they didn't just go on the left. They went on both sides. That was the true beauty of the Russian strategy. It was like, we don't care who wins.
Who's the craziest people we could find on the internet? Yeah. Cut them a check.
Just keep them fighting. But you've seen footage of these people just like getting off buses, going to those protests. And it's like, well, who's chartering these buses? Well, in some cases, it seems like it was the Russians.
I've got to say, this is probably a brilliant strategy to maybe skirt, being accused of directly meddling in another country's elections. And it's like, no, we thought those crazy people had something of merit to say. Yeah. We're just letting them,
just supporting the cause. And in a lot of cases, like with the whole, I think this organization called itself Blacktivist. So it's like, hey, we're supporting this downtrodden race. Who can argue with that, right? So very interesting. I think they did go on the other side, but the other side didn't have a catchy name. So
do you think that they'll make the connection between this kind of thing and like Citizens United with corporations doing what Russia is doing in terms of funding people that may or may not should have a pulpit in which to
We got a story about Citizens United later. But the other thing to keep in mind about that, I think we talked about this last week, is they Hillary had that whole idea. It's like, I lost the election because of the Russians. No, the Russians were totally donating to the Hillary crazies as much as they were the Trump crazies. They just wanted people to fight. That's all they cared about.
It's really, really neat. So let's say that, your house was involved in a tornado and like the roof blew off and then it rained on all your stuff and you file your insurance claim and it's like, oh, we're not going to file your insurance claim because you didn't have tornado insurance, but you did have flood insurance. And yeah, water rained on all your stuff, but it didn't really matter because, it was rain water and not roof leak water. That's basically what the IRS is saying with the Equifax people. It's like, oh, you had all your data stolen by Equifax. It's cool because your data was already gone.
Now, they don't say it specifically in the story, but I have a feeling that means that the postponement of that IRS contract is only going to be a postponement and a short one, because they are basically saying, hey, Equifax didn't do anything wrong. You already had your stuff stolen because you're an idiot and you need to stop being pissed off about this. It's not fair.
The root problem here is that the politicians literally understand the situation like as if Equifax has been victimized. So, Equifax owns a house, somebody broke into their house and stole their TV, and the politicians are saying, well, we shouldn't blame the victim here for having their television stolen. And if that were the case, if that analogy applied, I would totally agree with the politicians. But the fact is that Equifax appears to have been dangerously incompetent with their IT security. So this would be like, I don't know, walking around the worst parts of Detroit clad in gold jewelry and diamonds. And then it's like, oh, something bad happened. Well, could no one have predicted this?
Well, but not only that, but it's not that you were walking around Detroit wearing all those things. It's that you were trying to sell them. They were making money on this data, a lot of money, and they were collecting it. So, it's like, also, you're going around collecting shiny objects off the ground to make yourself more of a target, but you don't try to defend yourself at all. So it's way worse than any of your analogies can possibly lay out.
The scale of the human mind is just not sufficient to really comprehend the gravity of the terribleness. Speaking of which, there's a gigantic Internet of Things botnet. This is like Mirai, but even larger than Mirai. It is based on similar code to Mirai, but it's different. It has been expanded, and it has been expanded by a skilled programmer. So this is a great, this is the botnet of baby monitors and, control systems and home cameras and just everything that shouldn't be on the internet in the first place.
Mirai was simply targets of opportunity. It would scan, it would find an open telnet port, and it would try default passwords. That's how it created its botnet. This thing actually has different vulnerabilities built into it. And it's like, okay, I've found this open telnet port. Let's attack it with this wide array of malware and see if we can get in. And thus, it is much larger than Mirai ever was, and it's growing pretty rapidly.
Now, Google is aware of these types of security problems, but they also extend to Android apps, especially popular Android apps. A lot of the time, companies come up with a popular Android app are not really putting a lot of work into their security, their bug bounty stuff. So Google is trying to give those companies a little bit of a spur. So anybody, basically the top ever how many Android apps, Google's going to give you an additional $1,000 on top of whatever you might get to hack applications like Tinder, Snapchat, Dropbox, basically the top popular Android apps in a bid to improve Android app security.
Now, there is a catch. You have to not only find the vulnerability and prove it to them, you have to help them fix it before you get paid. So that could take a while, and that's, you know, that's work. So I don't, in some cases, probably worth more than $1,000 to fix it. So I guess it's a good thing, but there is a little hook in there, so be careful.
It's a little bit of a token pay, but I guess it's cool to be like, hey, they cut me a check for this to solve this problem. Isn't that neat? Woohoo. So, Denuvo, if you've never heard of Denuvo, it's a fairly popular game copy protection DRM system. It has lots of terrible things that it does to your operating system. Well, it's largely ineffective now. They were saying, you know, this is basically unhackable, and anybody, historically, anybody that used this, the Denuvo people would say, if your game is hacked within X number of days or hours of release, we'll give you a refund, we'll pay you. And now it turns out Denuvo basically is not effective anymore.
This was the new South Park game that came out that was sort of the flagship here, less than a day. Now, I think a couple of games during the summer used this, and they got about a week before they were cracked. And you might think, well, that's ridiculous. Why would you even pay for that? But actually, for the game companies, a week's worth of sales could actually be, they could make money based on that. Like, it doesn't cost as much as you as losing a week's worth of sales. Although there's that whole thing where it's like, piracy numbers don't convert into sales, and that myth has been...
We've got official reports saying that.
Yeah, it's been soundly debunked. But less than a day, it's hard to think that that's worth anything, because, I mean, you've got the pre-order people who aren't affected, and you really got like a 12-hour window. If they're in a certain part of the world, they're sleeping for most of that. So, yeah, hopefully that's the coming of the beginning of the end for Denuvo.
Now, Canada, I was surprised to learn this, but apparently Canada has a super secret spy agency.
It was pretty secretive. I've never heard of it.
I've never heard of it either. So I mean, that's pretty surprising. Oh, why they're making themselves known by releasing a tool to help people find malware. It's basically a generic framework that is hopefully going to be shot in the arm for the malware industry in terms of malware detection and analysis.
They appear to be trying to clean up their image, because they are, of course, this shadow agency that nobody knows anything about, that's probably trampling on the rights of Canadians every day. And so they're trying to make people think that they're the good guys.
They're not doing it. They're putting the Mounties up to doing it.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that one. I mean, on the surface, it seems like it's a good thing, but who knows?
Now, our next story is a Class 9 disturbance. Like, it's bad. It's really bad. It's extra special bad. Like, I just don't even... You remember the story that we did probably almost a year ago about companies like Verizon injecting in your unencrypted HTTP traffic a unique header so that you could be uniquely globally identified? And they're like, well, we'll turn that off. Turns out it was replaced with something far more insidious. So if you are browsing the internet with your mobile phone, there are companies that your mobile phone operator provides an API access to, so that anybody with your mobile phone's IP address can retrieve your subscriber information and all of the details that you need from that API.
Now, they had demo pages up that were like, hey, look at this service we can provide to you. Just put in your phone number from your mobile phone right here and let us show you what we can do.
There were some demos that you just hit a button on your mobile phone and it gave you your own phone number and your subscriber name and your billing address and everything.
So some people found those and they're like, oh my God, look at this. They've since been taken down, of course. So we don't know who or if, I assume that the if is true. We don't know who is using this right now, who has it, who has access to these APIs. They have said that this is a security feature, which... They're like, how could you exposing my data be a security feature? And what they're saying is like, okay, you got a new phone, right? And you want to do some banking on it. Well, your bank doesn't recognize your new IP address. It doesn't recognize your new device. It doesn't know who you say you are. But because of that IP, it can query this API and say, oh, yes, the name on this account matches the name on this bank account. This must be who they say they are. It's sort of like... burning the house down so no one can break in, I guess.
it is so terrible for privacy. It is unfathomable how terrible this is for privacy. I mean, an anonymous website can be doing this in the background. Like, if you go to visit CNN.com or Fox News or that you know, Trump protest website that's been in the news like 12 times because of the court case with Dreamhost. Literally, just go from the IP address to subscriber information. No warrant, no, like, you're not even really sure what it is as a subscriber that you're agreeing to. I mean, it was literally just a click wrap agreement. I got to play with the API before it was taken down, and there was nothing. There was literally nothing. There was a button that was like, click here from your mobile phone. I was like, okay. And I clicked it, and it had all the info, which is really bad, really extra mega bad, because there was no pop-up on my phone. There was no indication that this was happening. Literally anybody, you know, with you could make this kind of a request from a web server and have your individually identifiable information from your phone. So if you browse websites from your phone without a VPN, might be time to invest in a VPN for your phone. We've got an affiliate link in the description.
You think about, like, even the most benign thing they could do here is put you on those stupid call lists. Because now they have your phone number, they have your name, and they have some more basic information about you. And you have no idea that you're providing it to anybody.
Now, you're not supposed to use it that way, but is it even logged? Does anybody check it? How do you know that you've been wronged? There is no mechanism here for you to know that you've been burglarized.
Yeah, I don't know. The question is, what kind of vetting is happening on, like, Verizon's end?
None. Zero. But, because yeah, the public internet, the demo service was open.
Well, you had to be from your own IP address, though. So the thing about it is, like, who are they selling that API access to now that the one has been taken down?
Really interesting. More insidiously, how many landline ISPs provide a similar service?
That's a good question. I mean, this probably goes back to the TV versus broadband price.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, listen, if you stop using our service in some way, we have to get our money back some other way. It's like, we can't lose money. That doesn't happen to telecom industries.
This price is not going down. This company will die trying if we don't. So, yeah. Wireless security, that story broke just as we were publishing the news last week. If you haven't heard about it, it's the WPA2 flaw, which would allow third parties to basically man in the middle of your connection. It's pretty bad.
Yeah, this just allows them to reuse keys that have already been used. So if they can look at your traffic, then they can use those old keys to make it replay things or, you know, pretend to be you, and pretty bad.
Now, the patch has to happen in a couple of different places. Well, it doesn't have to happen, but it should happen in a couple of different places. Recent versions of Windows, as of like 2 or 3 months ago, are basically patched and hardened against this. Apple's operating systems are basically patched and hardened against this. Older versions of Android, even current-ish versions of Android, are very susceptible to this problem. Yeah, somebody can man in the middle of your connection, and you would have no idea. A passphrase-protected internet connection through this mechanism, your traffic can be observed. Your unencrypted traffic can be observed. If you were using a VPN or HTTPS or something like that, you would almost be okay, except that some of that stuff can be stripped away in real time. Like if you know, a man-in-the-middle person would be able to strip away the SSL for Google, for example. So if you're not paying attention, you're not explicitly looking for the SSL connection in your address bar, you might not notice that something is wrong.
You could MAC filter as a sort of a stopgap. You know, you don't want any device ever touching your wireless unless you absolutely know what it is.
Now, if you're running enterprise wireless at home, which we recommend, your enterprise access points would notice that something is going on, something wrong is going on. So if you're paying attention to the logs, it would be pretty good. But this is a big deal. You're going to have to patch your devices as well as your software, like your wireless access points. Things like that should have new firmware. If your wireless access point doesn't get new firmware in the next couple of weeks or a month, time to get new wireless hardware. I mean, it's just the long and short of it. Speaking of really bad problems that are probably going to require lots and lots of hardware to be replaced in order to be secure, we've got a situation here with crypto in hardware. So this is a smart card. This is an ID card. The smart cards, YubiKey 4, a whole bunch of stuff, basically has completely broken random number generation, which has led to really terrible RSA key generation.
This was all from the Infineon devices that were creating keys. And of course, you got your public private. The problem here is your public key can be used with factorization. Well, it's the what was the name of the thing? The copper, copper something.
Yeah,
I can't remember what it was.
The copper, it's a version of the factorization algorithm, a known factorization algorithm, because the prime numbers that are chosen in the algorithm are predictable.
So for weaker keys, you know, it's a matter of CPU time on how long it takes to break these things. So if you were to use like Amazon and just spin up a bunch of CPUs, then it becomes a matter of cost. And it's the 1024 keys that were like $70 to break? So $70 on Amazon and they would have your private key.
And a 2048-bit key is like $40,000 in for Amazon EC2 instances.
Imagine like, okay, so the military uses these cards, right?
Yep.
Imagine you want to get into the Pentagon. Can you think of somebody who might want to pay $40,000 to get Pentagon access?
Now, this has not been reported anywhere that I know of, but this has all the hallmarks of a state-sponsored, state-introduced weakness. Like the math here is solid, and once again, which random numbers are chosen becomes the problem for this algorithm. Honestly, surprised nobody has noticed this sooner. These researchers did a scan of the internet to look for public keys that they knew that they would be able to factorize the private key. So they scanned GitHub, for example, for public keys, because a public key, I mean, it's designed to be public. Yeah, about a third of the keys that they found on GitHub from a random sampling of like 2,800 keys, about a third of those were factorizable. So about a third of those were generated from devices that their random number generation algorithm was compromised.
And it takes just a second to you can run the key through a checker and it'll tell you whether or not it can be broken. So you can just rapidly scan a lot of number of keys. Although it is only the Infineon and it's only RSA.
That is really interesting. Yeah. They did find a variant, though. There was the SCADA devices, which is like the industrial automation stuff, have a similar but different algorithm weak key. And that, I think, is probably going to end up, I would guess, I don't know. We need Bruce Schneier or somebody like that to weigh in on this. But my guess would be that because the algorithm was similar but different on the SCADA systems, that this is actually intentional. And this is exactly the type of weakness that we saw introduced with the elliptic curve encryption in terms of the random numbers are not actually random. And this would be, you know, the encryption is just strong enough to keep the low-level criminals out. But if you've got your army of math PhDs inside your intelligence organization that are working for you, it's not going to keep them out.
There is a, of course, you can, I think there's these checkers are online. So you can run your public key through these things and it'll tell you. There's also a command line that you can run a command that will tell you if you are running one of these Infineon TPMs on your motherboard. So maybe check that out.
Don't use just it for random number generation, I guess, because not actually random. Pizza Hut's having a bad week. If you ordered pizza on Pizza Hut's website, well, hackers probably have your data.
This was October 1st and 2nd. So if it was one of those first crisp fall days and you said, you know what,
I just want to
snuggle up and have a pizza tonight, well, say goodbye to your apparently a couple people have tweeted and said Pizza Hut, now okay, here's the thing, right? You're Pizza Hut, right? You've seen the Equifax news, right? I mean, how could you have missed it? But they didn't release this for a week. They knew about it, of course, because they stopped it after that second day, but they didn't say anything about it for a week. And people are like, oh, thanks, Pizza Hut. You knew about this for a week, and now my bank account's empty.
Pizza Hut.
It was credit card numbers and CVVs.
Wow.
In that. So, yeah, real bad.
Ouch. Yeah. Probably shouldn't store that online for any significant amount of time. This one was slightly surprising, but also not really in the new climate of adpocalypse.
Yeah.
YouTube has suspended the account of a Chinese dissident. Now, this is a Chinese national that is living not in China anymore, but he's speaking out against corruption in China and things like that. Really popular channel, 500,000 subscribers.
And this is not just some like whack job guy, you know, like an Alex Jones type. A lot of Alex Jones fans probably just downvoted, but this guy's a billionaire. And I think they made most of his money in China. So he's like, yeah, this is a guy who knows some things. I don't think it was inheritance. I think he earned his own money. But he was like, hey, I've been in the upper echelon of Chinese business and I've seen what's going on there. Let me tell you what's going on there. And the Chinese government clearly came to Google and they were like, no, he's not going to say this anymore. And Google was like, you're right, he's not. Shut it right down. He also lost his Facebook streaming capabilities and Twitter. He can't stream anywhere.
That's really so those of you that would downvote us for making fun of Alex Jones, remember, first they came for the Chinese dissident and you said nothing, but soon they will come for Alex Jones.
Yeah. I mean, you know, say what you want about Alex Jones. We do need him to have the ability to keep doing it.
Right? We need him to have the ability to be crazy, yeah, and also to be funded by Russia in order to disrupt things.
Yeah, well, you think about it. I mean, if you're trying to disrupt the U.S. government, you know, if it keeps them from legislating for a little while, it's probably good for the country.
It would be nice to, like, is anybody out there keeping a database of things? Because I'd love to know, like, just a running tally of, like, crazy people that the Clinton Foundation has funded, crazy people that the Trump campaign has funded, and then crazy people that, you know, whatever these other organizations are that... Because it's an exercise in who can give the craziest person the most money. I mean, that's all it is anymore.
Yeah, it seems like that. Well, that's the whole, like, I don't know if anybody's proven it, but they say that Soros is funding a lot of that crap. And you wonder, is he like the Russians? Is he playing some, like, 4D chess where he's just causing chaos towards some unknown goal?
Is it chess or is he just a mega troll? Because, like... You know, if I were that wealthy, I might do it just for the hilariousness of just watching everybody flail
he's
about.
He's the billionaire version of Martin Shkreli.
Well, this is probably going to end the same way. So the people that make tasers or the people that used to make tasers and other accessories for law enforcement are now making an app that the police force can ask the citizenry to use to report on things after an incident. It'll upload video, audio, pictures, the whole nine yards, but police can issue an alert and then citizens in the area would be able to use their phones to take video of whatever that is. Then they'll analyze it later.
Now, we talked about these guys before. I can't remember what they changed their name to. It was, I don't know. Their name used to be Taser and they were like, then people might have negative connotations to this. Let's change our name. But when we were... Back in the summer, we were full, or maybe it was the spring, where we had all those police shootings and the riots. They were like, hey, you know what? We're going to put police cameras on every cop in these major metro, and it's going to be free. Cameras are going to be free. Now, we are going to database all that footage, and you will have to pay a subscription if you want to search that footage. But the cameras are free. And they're sort of doing the same thing here, where it's like, hey, world star, right? How many crimes are on WorldStar right now? That's pretty much all you see. And God, they're entertaining. But they're saying, hey, when something goes down, we want all those videos so that cops can search them. And I'm sure there's going to be another subscription sort of deal where we have a giant database of crime. Come and shop through it and find something to prosecute.
Now, the straw that broke the camel's back here is that AI has gotten good enough that it is able to classify and add tags to things that are happening in the video automatically. So people, the clothes that people are wearing, their height. I mean, it's not a perfect system, but they're able to add tons and tons of searchable keywords to video algorithmically, because it would be an impossible task to have a human being do that at any given time.
Of course, last week we covered the Pornhub AI. If it can identify those acts, it can identify criminal acts.
Well, and a lot more. I mean, it's like, oh, you were, you know, it'll be like that guy that just happened to Google buying a pressure cooker before the Boston bombing. And it was totally innocent. But, you know, because that guy's stuff and paranoia and the human element, I mean, it seemed like this wouldn't be a terrible idea. But every time that this has happened in history, it has ended very badly. I mean, I'm thinking of like McCarthyism. I'm thinking of Germany. You know, in the mid 20th century, I'm thinking of, you know, just all of the times where things have ended really badly when the citizens were charged with something like this.
Think about last week when we covered those apps where you could scan the license plates. Remember those and find missing persons? That was a Dutch thing. But what if they go into a system where it's like, hey, if your video leads to this prosecution, you're going to get $200. You know, all of a sudden now you've got
$200, probably the free Pokemon.
Well, yeah, or maybe, you know, a free Pizza Hut. And we've got this, you know, the world is just pointing cameras at each other, hoping that they catch a crime. And it's, all privacy is destroyed by ourselves.
Yeah, that would be, I mean, I'm just imagining like the, you know, you live in a subdivision and you've got the little Napoleons that are running the homeowners association, right, yeah. And they're just going around with their cameras. And I'm just imagining this dystopian future where it's like, your grass is a quarter of an inch too high. I'm going to make sure that you get fined for that by taking a picture or video, yeah, or whatever of your lawn. And you it's just all automated.
Your garbage can's been on the curb for an extra 0.5 seconds. Now, they did say, they sort of, you know, saw that coming. And they said in this article that it won't be a way to just harass your neighbors by reporting crimes that they've done. But
kind of like how stingrays are only going to be used to find terrorists.
I can totally see them wanting, because if nothing else, uploading that kind of stuff trains their AI.
Yeah.
So they would gladly let you do it, even if it's like, that's not really a crime, but hey, it'll teach our AI. So sure. Yeah. Go ahead and upload that dog barking for 20 minutes.
Oh, laptops and flight risk. There is consideration for banning laptops from flights, at least in checked luggage, because the batteries can't be controlled. The batteries are unruly.
This is so it's funny how they sort of talk about it. It's like, well, if a laptop were to catch fire, then we could probably deal with that. But what if a laptop caught fire and there was nothing but aerosol cans and the rest of the suitcase? It's like, you just imagine that guy packing for that trip. Why do you need all those aerosol cans and a laptop?
I did see a guy getting stopped by security because his carry-on luggage had two cans of silver spray paint. And it's like, are you huffing spray paint?
Got to get through that flight any way you can. But of course, they say that most people do bring their laptops as carry-ons. Because of course, why not? Something to do on the plane. But then recently we banned laptops for a little while. So it's like, well, you have to check your laptop. Well, wait a minute. No. You mustn't check your laptop. And it's just all these rules. It's ridiculous.
Senators are announcing a new bill that would regulate online political ads. This is just something to make themselves feel better about themselves.
Well, the whole Russian thing. I think they're a little embarrassed by that. It's not that crazy if you really think about it. It's sort of applying the same rules to, you know, it's like the, oh, I'm Bob Smith and I approve this message, you know, that kind of thing that they have on TV and stuff like that. But maybe the better thing would be, let's not advertise political campaigns and media like that. You know, let's let's make it so people actually have to go and find out what your message is.
Amazon has spent $350,000 in Seattle's mayor race, which just seems a little excessive. I mean, what's going on with that?
Yeah. Now, of course, you read into this. The current popular candidate there, she looks like a real hipster, but she is totally like anti-corporate, you know, pro-grassroots kind of. She's going for municipal broadband, and immediately all the ISPs like Verizon was like, here, opponent, take all this money. And she's sort of anti-corporate, so now Amazon's like, yes, here's $350,000. You must beat this person. And this is why we're talking about Citizens United. Citizens United is what makes this possible.
Yeah.
And it's a bad thing because
turns out
municipal broadband is probably good. I mean, yeah, okay, if those people who are like, you know, the government shouldn't be in charge of anything, blah, blah, blah. But look at where we are. Look at what we talked about with, oh, you're not going to buy TV? Well, then we're going to raise your broadband prices. You know, you must get TV. Well, this kind of thing keeps them in power.
The plan in the 96 Telecommunications Act was really prescient. The government was responsible for the infrastructure, the last mile infrastructure, and local companies could rent out that infrastructure for the same cost to provide whatever services they wanted. That is the right mix. That's the right balance of public-private partnership to get that done. That's where we need to be. The plan was already written 30 years ago. Let's just do it. Come on. The EU, this story is really interesting. So the EU is maybe softening their position on the whole, well, we want, you know, we must have encryption backdoors everywhere. But then you read into it and it's like, well, not really. What they're talking about in this article is exactly the kind of thing that we're seeing with the Infineon and the dual elliptic curve weakened encryption, where it's like, look, it's really strong. And mathematically, like if you attack the math, math is solid. But then there's some little weakness that's introduced that's very hard to detect. When the instructions for the math say, assume this is true, most mathematicians will say, okay, yes, I will assume that that's true. And if that's not actually true, then you run into problems.
So basically they did say no backdoor. So I guess that's progress. They're not going to do that. But they are going to sort of get everybody together. Let's say that your device is seized in Germany. They want the entire EU to be in on fixing that. And so that means that if the company that sold it to you isn't in Germany, then they still need to, they have to get involved and cracking your device.
They just want free Amazon servers to crack those keys, those weakened keys.
So I suppose it's a small step in the right direction. At least there are not, that we know of, obvious government backdoors. So that's something.
Dubai is getting police hover bikes. It looks like it's something from Star Wars. I really think this story is a nothing burger because I can't imagine that these are not dangerous and wildly impractical.
Look at the rotors have no guards. Like, you move your leg back half a foot there in that picture. I'll go back to that picture. Like, let's say you get a muscle spasm. Look how close that rotor is.
Yeah, that just doesn't seem like that would work out for you.
That would be or if, like, you were falling off, you know, like one of the rotors fails and it dips down on one side and you flail a leg out.
Have you seen the video of the safe circular saw? It's made for the guy that's, you know, all thumbs.
Yeah. The hot dog.
Like, they take the hot dog, and they touch and then it retracts. Maybe there's something like that with the blades.
Yeah, but then you fall out of the sky. What's better, keeping your femur or dying in a fiery crash? Now, they do show a video of that thing working, and I didn't see any safeguards in the video either. So maybe it's just like, hey, these Dubai policemen are just so hardcore, they don't even need any safeguards. But yeah, Dubai, these things are, they're all electric, so they don't last. I think there's like a 20-minute runtime or something
25,
like
that. 25, yeah.
And it's 45 miles an hour, but it can fly over traffic. So
yeah, that just seems, it's like you're going to deploy that off the out the back of your police cruiser or something. I mean, that's just...
But again, you're cruising over traffic, right? You get a leg cramp. It gets lopped off, you black out from the pain, and you crash into traffic with, again, rotors with no guards on them whatsoever. So you're just shearing off the tops of cars. I think a lot could go wrong.
Well, a new study has come out, and it has determined that the federal government has a real problem with spoofed email. 1 in 4 emails from a federal.gov account is actually a fraudulent email. So if you're getting emails from the VA or Veterans Benefits or anything like that, 25% chance, probably not legit.
Probably trying to get you to one of those web pages that's going to steal your subscriber data. Now, there is a little bit of a caveat to that story. It's a study by one of the companies that does the DMARC service, which safeguards against the spoofing if you subscribe to them. So they're like, hey,
we need a federal contract.
Yeah, we can fix this problem for you, feds. But yeah, I don't find that hard to believe. You know, whether it's legit or spoofed, I would never trust a .gov email anyway.
Well, Cheap Pie is back in the news, this time for finally coming out. And like, so the news story here is that it took him 6 days to say that the FCC can't revoke broadcast licenses based on news content. So there was some news content. Somebody was pissed off about something some news network said.
It was Trump.
It's like, we need to revoke this because this is fake news and whatever. And it's like, and Ajit Pai is like, we don't, that's not how that works. But it took almost a week for him to say that.
Trump, it was one of Trump's tweet storms. And he was like, you know, New York Times is fake news. They should have their license revoked. And of course, Pai didn't say anything because, you know, he's in Trump's pocket for sure. But you, like, even he was like, dude, we can't spin this.
You think maybe there's just the faintest spark of realization about the horrible things that he is doing and has done?
Well, I think he knows there's a line that even he can't cross. Right? I mean, he's going to be assassinated if he goes too much further. So he's like, hey, we got to dial this back.
In a bid to make Twitter more ripe for acquisition by somebody, they're rolling out a timeline to end revenge porn, hate speech, and all sorts of other fun stuff. The timeline was in here. Yeah, here it is. So they're like, okay, we're going to do all these things to make our platform more attractive. and they trail off a bit, I'll fill in the part where they trailed off more attractive to investors or somebody who might acquire them.
Now, non-consensual nudity? Like, how does Twitter know?
Well, I guess if somebody complained, but I mean, how is that already not okay?
This is supposed to be like immediate before the complaint happens, or even if you're not aware of it, somehow they're supposed to know that. Is nudity okay on Twitter?
To an extent, I think.
Oh, okay.
So maybe they're going to curtail that in the future. I don't know.
The other scary one, organizations and groups that advocate violence. So you think the military? Are they not going to be able to tweet? How about the FBI?
Rumsfeld's Twitter account's going to be shut down.
I mean, there's a lot of violence going on. What about police departments? You know, they get violent.
It's like, has anybody seen this man? And it's just somebody wailing on somebody else with a claw hammer. It's like, yeah. I've seen that from local police departments. I don't know.
You got to check the taser database.
Well, switching gears a little bit to hardware news. Consumer Reports has refused to recommend the Surface Book 2, but they haven't put their hands on it yet, which is kind of surprising. But I'm definitely not going to defend the Surface Book 2 because it looks really lackluster on paper.
Yeah, this is, I don't know. I don't know if this is fair. They're basing this on all of the other line of Microsoft products they've seen so far, and they all have the same problems. And if you just look at the specs of this thing, it's probably going to have them too. Microsoft, of course, has come out and said, hey, we fixed all those, and you really need to take a look at it. And I think probably, I don't know, I don't think you should ever be recommending or not recommending, and I guess that's kind of what they're doing, a product before you've seen it, before you've used it, right? I mean, that makes sense.
I already know that the Surface Book 2 does not have Thunderbolt. Therefore, it is not on my radar this generation. I was willing to give Microsoft the benefit of the doubt because its funky little hinge thing basically is a PCI Express interface on the Surface Book. But they opted not to go with USB-C or Thunderbolt or something a little bit beefier than that. And so I do not care about this product, sadly. Or interestingly, I don't know. I like the screen, the 3x2 screen. That's nice. Wish other laptops had that. If anybody sees a laptop with that form factor screen, let me know because I'll probably buy that one, especially if it's got Thunderbolt. CNN gets a waiver to fly drones over crowds. These are really, you know, I thought this was a big deal, but I looked at the drones and they're actually really small and lightweight. So even if they come out of the sky or somebody throws a beer at them or something, it's probably not going to hurt anybody. So I'm probably okay with this.
Well, I mean, from a certain height, I'm sure it would hurt. I don't know if it'd kill you. But yeah, this is interesting that, you know, they feel CNN needs. Now, why does CNN get this edge and none of the other news organizations?
They were the first one to file their application in 1998. So, yeah.
But during the next riot, you can expect to see some sweet aerial footage from the CNN drones.
So can I get a regular drone and just put a CNN sticker on the side? Nobody will bother.
Please return to CNN if found.
Netflix, Amazon, and movie studios are suing TikTok over a streaming device. Now, Netflix and Amazon participating in this was the really surprising thing. This was a website that is like, so this is bad, but not for the reasons that you might think. TikTok is looking at the website and the language that they use on the website. It seems like it's on the other side of anything that could be construed as like fair use or it has non-infringing uses or anything like that. Whereas I think Kodi is definitely more on the side of it has non-infringing uses and the primary use of Kodi.
This thing is Kodi. It uses Kodi.
It uses Kodi underneath. Yeah, yeah. Well, no, I mean, but I think this is ultimately bad for Kodi because this, like, if the movie studios had attacked Kodi first, I think they probably would have lost. It would have been close. Because they have attacked TikTok first, I think it's going to weaken Kodi's position.
Now, if you don't know what these things are, there's nothing on this box. It just simply searches and finds streams on the internet that are labeled as whatever they are labeled and returns those search results to you. And it does go a little further than that in terms of like categorizing them. I think it's got to categorize these folks like in theaters. Well, of course, in theaters is never going to be okay to stream. You know, I mean, you know that. So when you build a menu that has an in theaters option, yeah, yeah, they probably, you know, you're going to get nailed on that. But it is, and of course, it doesn't actually contain any copyright material. It simply makes it simple for you to get to it.
So I think that this case is going to be the wedge that drives a nail into the heart of applications like Kodi, which have very significant non-infringing uses.
Now, these got TikTok. Now, here's a question. Do they call it TikTok or it's like TikTok or do they think, or is it the tick just sucking the blood
from the media
from
empire.
The copyrights.
I hadn't thought about that.
I hope it's the latter. But they have not responded to any of this, the legal part or the, you know, the reporters trying to get to them. It doesn't seem like either they don't know how to respond or they're afraid to respond or whatever. So I don't think they're going to mount much of a defense.
Again, I think it would be nice if a standards-based organization would get involved here. Like, I think most people don't mind to pay for Netflix and Hulu and whatever else that it might be that the stream services. But I do think that people mind having to use 17 different applications to figure out something to watch or to find a program or to do a search. And it's like, hey, my Star Trek The Next Generation disappeared. It's not on Netflix anymore. Now it's on Hulu. Or it's not on Netflix. Now it's on, you know, Disney's thing or Fox's thing or whatever. I think people just want to watch TV. They don't want to have to think about it. And I think if there is an application like Kodi that could connect to a legal API that is a standardized API, all of this would just go away because piracy is a distribution problem. It is not a people wanting free stuff problem.
Comcast is listening to that and they're like, yeah, they just want it to work, which is why you got to get regular cable.
Anybody that has ever used Comcast's cable box, probably, I mean, it's, I, yeah, it's bad. It's real bad. Set-top boxes won't send me into a murderous rage.
Well, but to be honest, even if it was the greatest UI in the universe, still got commercials in it, right? There's still ground-up glass in the cocaine. So
I want my 30-second skip button, damn it. Smartphones are killing Americans, but nobody's counting. So this story is a story about how apparently when people die and a smartphone is involved, we're not tracking that, and they want to assign the smartphone as the cause of death, no matter what.
Yeah, so there was it Tennessee, I think? Tennessee does. It's the only state that pays attention to whether or not a smartphone might have been involved in a traffic accident, for example. And I don't even think they require it. It's just like they have the little box on there, fill out an accident form for the cops. Mm. And so you can put that in there. And it turned out like it was 19% in Tennessee versus 2% in every other state. So it's like, yeah. It's happening. We just, our law enforcement and our, you know, emergency people aren't trained to detail it as such. And the woman created some kind of nonprofit. Her mother was killed by a guy who was on the phone. And he admitted that he was on the phone. That's why he ran the red light. Hmm. So she's trying to get it changed. So it's like we say, yes, phone was involved here. And, of course, you got to wonder, I mean, the phone lobby, the telecoms, and the phone manufacturers, again, you know, Apple and Google and Verizon and Comcast are going to go crazy fighting that.
Yeah.
Because, no, that's, you do not want somebody saying that your product kills people.
time will tell. Maybe they'll bring the self-driving cars a little faster because of this.
That's true. It's probably a problem that goes away in the next 10 to 20 years, whether we do anything or not.
Now, this is a really interesting story because Newegg is involved. So Korean banks are suing a Southern California computer parts retailer, Newegg, of course, for alleging a Ponzi scheme. Now, it's not just Newegg that's involved. You know, Newegg has this program where, like, if you sell stuff, you can join Newegg as, like, an affiliate reseller. So it's kind of a convoluted story, but it seems like an electronics manufacturer signed up with Newegg and then generated a lot of fake sales somehow, whether or not with Newegg and another external company's help. And so then they went back to the banks and said, hey, our product is really popular. We're going to need loans. They got loans to the tune of $1 billion.
$3 billion.
Jesus.
And so it was a classic Ponzi. They would pay back a loan. So they'd get that loan. Then they'd pay it back with the same money. And they'd say, oh, look at all these sales. Look at all this profit we made. Oh, here's your loan money back. Hey, can we get a loan twice as big? And they got to like $3.5 billion. And then it eventually just disappeared. One of the guys they did catch, he is in prison, and it's obvious.
He got 24 years for this.
Yeah, and it was definitely a scam. But now they're going after these South Korean banks are saying, hey, Newegg knew, they had to know, and now we're going to sue them.
Looks like it was Newegg and ASI that were involved. So this is going to be a court case that we're going to follow really closely. It'll be curious to see if Newegg settles this or to what extent Newegg was involved, or was it just, you know, somebody abusing that reseller control panel on Newegg, because you can do that. That's the thing.
The banks claim that this was a product that should retail for like $10-$15, and they were claiming $300 per.
Hmm.
So when they really started looking into it, it was like, wow, There's no way. So it does seem like if anybody at Newegg was looking at it, that might have raised a red flag. But with all the different products they got going through there, you wonder if anybody cared.
Yeah.
I mean, the bills were paid.
Does the guy in the warehouse really know how much whatever the widget was? I mean, I don't know. Hardware news, PC Perspective has some unofficial information on the GTX 1070 Ti. So if you've been living under a rock, Vega 56 came out. Vega 56 is basically down to MSRP prices. When it initially launched, it had crazy prices. Vega 56 is about $399. And with an overclock, it'll perform really close to a GTX 1080. It's a little bit faster than a GTX 1070, which for $399 for a graphics card, that's a pretty good deal. So NVIDIA is kind of responding with a 1070 Ti, which performs a little better than a 1070, but not quite as good as a 1080.
I think MSRP for that's like $450,
so
$439, something like that. So
at least according to what PC Perspective is reporting,
they do warn that you will probably not get one for that price in the immediate future. So
you got to wait for the price to settle down. Apparently, yeah. I still at the time of this broadcast checking Newegg, the Vega 56 I think was $449 on Newegg. But if you sign up for like the email, I have seen the email come through that's like $399, buy it now, but you got to click this button right now in order to buy it. So
now, I have not kept up with Ethereum. I don't think it's tracked Bitcoin with the huge price increases, has it?
I don't think so. It's gone up, but not as dramatically.
So maybe some people losing interest in the mining there. I don't know.
Who could say? Another story from last week that we sort of ran short on time is Western Digital. So we talked about heat-assisted magnetic recording a long time ago. We talked about shingled technology a long time ago. This is a new technology. This is microwave-assisted magnetic recording, MAMR. MAMR technology.
MAMR. So this is it basically gives you, if you think about like you're just putting dots on a paper with a pencil, this shaves the point of the pencil down to a very, very small point. And that's more aerial storage, you know? So you see the same kind of, same size disk, but you're making smaller and smaller writes to it. And so you would say, and now this is MAMR, of course, MAMR. So would we say that large MAMRs have large aerial?
I'm not going to touch that one with a 10-foot pole. The problem has always been writing versus reading. I mean, we can pack in the data for reading. We can read the magnetic properties, no problem. But writing has always been the problem with these. But with this technology, we could see 40 terabyte, 3.5-inch disks really fairly quickly. Although I'm not really super comfortable with this technology unless it is explained to me in song form from Actuator Man. Because that's what explained perpendicular recording to me. And if you haven't seen that, Hitachi's got a great video that is get perpendicular. And you should like there's like seven people that are really laughing hard right now. I'm just going to stop explaining the joke. Let's just go on to the next thing. It's fine. Intel debuts a deep learning AI chip to battle NVIDIA. So Intel's looking around and they're saying, you know, not really getting involved in the GPU game might have been a mistake because people are using GPUs for a lot of stuff other than graphics processing, including AI. So Intel really, really wants in on the AI because the profit margins there are nuts. They're feeling a little left behind, and they're starting to sample technology that probably won't be in wide production until next year. But this is a purpose-built AI chip. And so Intel says, look, we built this for AI. It's going to work better than a graphics card. I mean, come on. We built it for AI, and so therefore it will work better. But there's not really a lot of information beyond that available right now.
It's called the Nervana, NERVANA, neural network chip. They did say that they have eschewed the things that a GPU needs to make gaming cool and other sorts of graphical stuff cool, like caching. Hey, machine learning knows exactly what's coming in and what's going out. We don't need caching, so there's no caching. And when you use that to make it faster and do all those other things, so, you know, that makes sense, I guess, to have something like this, but it remains to be seen how it will perform versus NVIDIA's thing. Of course, last week we talked about NVIDIA's got the self-driving GPU. I don't know if you call that a GPU. I guess you call that like
hardware that will make its way into GPUs.
Chip. You just call it a chip. And so I wonder if this thing could compete with that in terms of, you know, that type of thing. I guess that's got to have a lot of I/O that this one wouldn't.
It'll be interesting to see how this shakes out if Intel's able to recover. Even if it's the best thing since pocket on a shirt, Intel has got a massive uphill battle in terms of entering the AI market because it is dominated by GPUs and GPU-based technology and also the software stack. You know, a lot of researchers that are working on this software stack, that's been AMD's problem as well. I mean, AMD has higher compute performance than NVIDIA, but because the software stack on the NVIDIA side of things is a little bit more coherent, a little bit more organized, you know, AMD has struggled a little more than they should have because they've got the better performing cards. It's really fascinating. It's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out for Intel. The Windows 10 Fall Creators Update is here. And yeah, there's some articles, there's some videos on that. We're probably not going to do anything special with the Windows 10 Fall Creators Update. There are a few enhancements. The Task Manager will show you GPU usage. It can have a minor performance uplift in some games, but by and large, if you tuned your system correctly, you're not really going to see a performance bump. There might be a small performance bump if you've got a low-end CPU, but it's nothing dramatic.
It's a lot of bells and whistles that I personally don't care about.
Pretty much.
They did do the whole Xbox Windows Game Store consolidation, which that might actually be a bad thing. I don't know how I feel about that. I'm never going to use the Windows Game Store. So
they also, as part of that, they also provided something interesting, which was Windows kernel hooks into game anti-cheat technology. So game developers can now get really deep into the operating system, scary deep into the operating system, in order to perform anti-cheat functions.
Yeah, but that marries us even more closely to Windows. It's a gaming platform.
So yeah.
Do we really want that?
Got to get working on those Linux-powered Steam boxes. Those need to take over the world.
Yeah, but then you won't be allowed to play PUBG because they don't have the hooks.
Now, Amazon was also granted a patent this week for patents. It's a drone that can charge your EV, but when Amazon was asked about it, they really, really downplayed it and was like, yeah, we were working on this in like 2015. This is not anything that we have an immediate thing for, but basically they want to fly a battery to your car and use it to charge your, but you know, a flying battery doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, batteries are heavy and
can't wait to catch on fire.
You imagine that these are being carried in traffic, right? So again, if this drone fails, you've got a giant, heavy, possibly flammable object hurtling towards your car. It seems like a nightmare.
What could go wrong?
Yeah. And I don't even think that they're able to, because again, batteries are heavy. Drones can't carry that much weight. So the thing that they could actually deliver at this point isn't going to give you more than, you know, a couple more miles.
Now, a lot of you were really upset we didn't announce the live robot stream last week. Well, it's because we were pretty sure we knew how it was going to turn out, and it would seem to be that we were right. We were exactly right with how it was going to turn out.
This article is from CNBC, and they play it like totally like, oh my God, this happened. It was the most amazing thing in the world. Now, I think at this point they've admitted it, but even if they haven't admitted it, the truth is it was scripted. They filmed it over a series of days. It wasn't really like a seamless event. And it was basically pro wrestling with giant robots.
With giant robots.
Not even that entertaining. No, I mean, pro wrestling is way more entertaining than the abortion that came out of this thing.
Wasn't the announcer a pro wrestling guy too? Like
no, he was he used to be the UFC guy.
Oh, the UFC guy. Okay, yeah. Okay. I was just imagining a world where it's like the Undertaker or something was refereeing that, and it's just I don't know.
And at one point, there was a fake explosion. And he and the girl that was co-commentating had to run away. It was it's like, I think it was about an hour, and it's about an hour of cringing. Well, it's about 40 minutes of like backstory and let's look at the robots. And then the rest of the time is just like, oh, what are you showing me?
What do you give those robots an AI? Although DeepMind at this point is playing Go on such a high level that it doesn't require human involvement anymore. So we talked about the DeepMind winning the worldwide Go competition. It has been progressing at the speed of light or the speed of electricity, I guess, since then. And it no longer requires human intervention to do anything, really.
They took... So the one that... There was the DeepMind version that beat the one guy. Like the amazing Korean guy. And then there was like a DeepMind, I think they call it two. This is DeepMind Zero. DeepMind Zero has never encountered a human player. It never needed one. It just simply simulated a game and then added that to the catalog, simulated another game, and then just kept going and learning from all those simulated games, and it has only ever played Go against itself until it got to the point where it could beat the old robots. So, incredible.
This is the point at which, you know, there's the monologue that's over the scene of the desert or whatever, and it's like Skynet went online at 2:21 a.m.
Yeah. Well, you got to think, I mean, of course, warfare is never going to have the stringent rules that Go has. But if you think about how quickly technology, like if you look at Super Mario Brothers and then you look at modern PC gaming and you add, you know, what, another 30 years for the Go AI, would it be able to scorch the earth? I probably would.
You say that, you know, you say that, but in my mind, all I can picture is there would be no conflict if kill all humans.
Or, you know, even if you really like at the hardware level, it's like, hey, these specific humans, you never kill these specific humans. You have the people on the other side who are hardwired in the other direction, and it just keeps escalating.
In a science story, this was sort of troubling. There's apparently some sort of ecological Armageddon going on because flying insects are down a huge percentage. I mean, we've noticed apparently the butterflies were down, but it turns out that just about every flying insect is down, which is really bad because it turns out a lot of things eat those insects, including birds, which is going to dramatically affect those populations as well.
And pollination. Yeah, butterflies and bees, of course. Everybody's like, oh, butterflies and bees, they're so wonderful, but nobody really cries for the sand hornet.
Or the mosquito.
Yeah,
or...
but it turns out, well, I don't know, the mosquitoes, they don't eat flowers, do they? I don't know what the males eat, because they don't suck blood, right? Somebody can tell us in the comments. But yeah, it turns out we do need insects.
Lots of flying insects.
It's, you know, everybody hates them, but they have a purpose, and they are dying out quickly. And no one, of course, everybody points to pesticides, but I don't, either we don't know or we do know, and those studies have been purchased by Monsanto every time they come to light, and the people are suicided.
Now, our next story is very near and dear to my heart. It turns out that we may be able to go live on the moon much sooner than expected because of underground lava tubes. So yeah, underground lava tubes, if you're not familiar, basically, let me find a picture. There are underground domes. Oh, there's not a good picture. I thought there was a good picture.
I don't think they've seen it.
It's like a model. So like the one that they found, Philadelphia would take up about a third to a quarter of it. So basically it's a huge underground dome on the moon that's made by magma cooling and compacting and contracting. So they've long been theorized, and NASA has done some robotics equipment to like drill, like to some experiments to drill a hole in the surface and do that kind of thing. Well, they found a naturally occurring hole in the surface of Mars into one of these lava tubes, and it goes down like 1.6 kilometers or something like that.
The moon, you said Mars.
Oh, yeah, I meant the moon.
This is the Japanese actually found this. And they are actually, the Japanese and the Chinese are kind of in a space race, the way we were with the Soviets. And so the Japanese are saying, we have found the moon tube, and we are going to be there, and we want like a base by 2034.
Yeah, I mean, it is very realistic. There's a ton of science behind the lava tube stuff. I mean, it sounds like, it's like, oh, that seems really far-fetched. No, there's like there's science around like actually pressurizing it. Like you plug the hole at the top, and then you can pressurize the dome with an atmosphere, and then all of a sudden you're living under Mars. Radiation shielding, because hey, the surface of Mars is really good at shielding against radiation. It's actually very hospitable.
They're actually also sort of theorizing that there might be useful resources inside the dome to be mined. So possibly even some sort of frozen water like kind of deal, or some kind of fuel. Which would be pretty incredible. I mean,
Hydrogen 3, I think, is what it is.
Would you go and live in the moon tube?
I would at least go visit. I mean, it'd be a fun place to vacation.
Even with the internet delay?
Even with the internet delay. It'll probably be the Wild West of internet. It'll be like Cuba. You know, you'll have everything on flash drives, and things will just be kind of weird, but kind of Wild West. I think that would be a fun place to vacation. Probably not a fun place to live. Probably a fun place to vacation.
It's definitely... if there are valuable resources there, I could see it very quickly expanding into a huge station, you know, and that would be cool. We could start, I mean, if there's fuel, think about it. We could just start expanding the tube.
Yeah, yeah.
And the moon could become a hollow shell.
Yeah.
So that we could rape its resources and eventually destroy it.
I've read a lot on interplanetary colonization, and the lunar lava tube is by far the best case scenario. And finding one that fits the models, because we weren't 100% sure about some of the details about this, but finding one that has been explored this way, I think we're in good shape. So this is really, really a good news.
What do you think copyright law would be like in the moon lava tube?
Non-existent. Activision.
You stream all anything you want to the moon. You got to wait 12 minutes. But
well, no, I mean, they just wouldn't let the internet. They wouldn't let the internet from the moon come to Earth in that case. So, you know, it's a don't ask, don't tell.
Yeah, but by that time, how easy will it be to get a satellite up there? Your own satellite.
Oh yeah, I mean, you could just about huck something into lunar orbit from the surface. So
yeah, that's gonna be
throw it.
Things are gonna get weird. Cool kind of weird.
I like the cool kind of weird. I do not like the Activision kind of weird that they're doing here. So Activision has got a patent to basically make you frustrated with the game in order to buy power-ups in the game or loot crates or whatever. And I just want to never buy anything from Activision again.
Now, they have said, we're not using this. It's just a patent. We were experimenting. But, of course, they were experimenting for a reason. What they want to do is they want a multiplayer game where, let's say you just started playing, right? Maybe you got a couple of games under your belt. And then all of a sudden you go up against some super power player who just crushes you. And you're like, wait, what's going on here? Why is the MMR putting me up against this guy who's clearly way ahead of me? Well, they want you to lust after that person's equipment, right? It's like, oh, wow. If only I could have that gun and that armor, I could maybe compete. And then they're going to show you little advertisements like, oh, hey, just go over to the microtransaction store and you can get that gun for $3.99. And that is it's a dark future.
I'll give the PR department of Activision some free consulting. Some, you know, this is, people pay top dollar for this. I'm telling you, here's your free consulting. What you need to do is you need to immediately announce that this patent was a defensive patent, that this behavior is so insidious and so unacceptable that you have defensively patented this to prevent anybody from using such terrible, terrible game-breaking mechanics anywhere inside the industry because it is such a terrible and insidious thing. And then you've got a PR win on your hand. Thank you. If you want to send me a, you know, like an Outback gift card or something, I wouldn't say no, but, you know, that's fine.
Well, but here's the problem here. let me debunk you real quick. You simply have to look at Activision's current library of games and how they're using microtransactions, and that would be immediately debunked.
Well, I mean, they can still spin it. I mean, they can lie about it. I mean, isn't that half the job of a PR firm?
I think they would lie about everything. They certainly lie about like the graphical fidelity and all that stuff.
Battlegrounds, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, if you've been living under a rock, it's gotten insanely popular, peaking at like 2.2 million concurrent players. It's banning 6,000 players a day, although this past Friday, they apparently banned 20,000 players for cheating.
Yeah, it's, I think the, it's sort of a problem that it's a self-breeding problem where it's so popular that people want to win at any cost. So there's this underground economy of cheats. But yeah, they're getting real serious about getting rid of those people. What is it? I think it's $30, right?
Yeah.
So every time you get busted doing this, it's $30.
It's terrible. It's really terrible.
In a way, though, I don't think they mind if those people just rebuy another key and get right back in there.
That's probably true. Yeah. It's like, we'll let you play for like a few days and then we're going to ban you again. Yeah. Like, oh, you got 4 days that time, ban him. I think that's probably standard MO for them.
Someday we'll probably like learn that they were the ones creating the hack software and selling it. It's like, yes, keep them on the treadmill.
That would be the most awesome duck blind ever. Set up your thing in the dark web selling Battlegrounds cheats, and yeah. Then it's like, oh, it came from the inside, but you could track it. I mean, that would, you know, from an anthropological standpoint, that would be really interesting.
Well, you could, like you say, you minimize the damage because nobody's going to get away with it for more than a day or two, but they're going to keep buying keys and they're going to keep rebuying new hacks, which you're supplying and tracking. And then if it ever gets too bad, you can just turn them all off because it was you all along.
They could, I think they could take it a step further. There could be like the Gen 2 hack system where literally they've got servers that only hacked players are playing on. I think that would, I mean, that would, you would end up with some weapons grade cheat software after a while.
That would, yeah. Well, the bad thing about that though is you're like training a new generation of, so like every subsequent game is going to have those same atomic cheats coming out for it.
This is perhaps our funniest story of the entire program.
Well, some of you might not think this is funny. If you don't think this is funny,
I think this is really funny.
You're part of the problem.
So Google Maps rolled out an update. You know how Google Maps is like, I need to get from A to B, and it's like, well, if you take a car or you bicycle or you take the train or it's this many bus stops, and it also has walking, well, they added a new feature so that when you walk, it will actually show you how many calories you burn. Well, that apparently upset some people.
So apparently this is some form of fat shaming or something to that effect. Like, because Google is, I mean, it's not even saying, hey, fatty, why don't you walk a couple steps? It's just saying, hey, this is an option. Hey, you could walk if you wanted to. That's useful information. But they got so much backlash. Now, there is one small thing, which, again, I think is a great feature. It used little tiny cupcake icons to show you how many calories, which, I mean, that's funny, right?
Cupcake is definitely a universal symbol.
They are a useless food. You know, it's empty calories, no matter how you slice it. But yeah, so much backlash and so much anger that you're not going to get the walking calorie calculator anymore.
I just can't. This is why we can't have nice things. Yeah. I like that. I like that feature. I think that's a good feature.
I don't think I'd ever use it, but why would you want to get rid of it?
I mean, can you go in preferences and turn it back on? Is that a thing?
No, they did say that there was no way to turn it off, which was like completely unacceptable. But I don't understand. Maybe I could maybe see if like you don't have any legs. And you know, it's like, oh, why Google? Why you got to remind me every day that I don't? But that's such a small portion of the audience that it's the professional victims, and we've come to a dark age.
Well, no, that's kind of a good point though. Like at some point in your Google profile, will you enter that it's like I'm tooling around in a wheelchair all the time, and Google Maps would change its interface to be like, you're going to have to wheel yourself this way, and it's going to take this long.
Well, think about how useful that could be, because it will give you a wheelchair accessible route.
That's not actually a bad thing.
Another useful feature that we'll never get because people are going to get offended by it.
Well, this turned out to be another long episode. We're going to see you next week. It's going to be interesting.
Oh, yeah. Be sure to tune in for the special season 2 premiere.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if we're going to... Well, just be on the lookout for tweets or announcements or things, because we might do that a little differently. We'll see the first episode of the new season. See ya.